Every year, 600 New Zealanders are diagnosed with a group of six cancers caused by one virus.
We need to take care of our young people because this is a problem that affects young people, and then it will affect the rest of their lives.
A new health economy study has found that between 2019 and 2022, treating these cancers cost New Zealand $105 million. And that doesn't include diagnosis. And here's the kicker. They're preventable with a vaccine that we already have.
It's indisputable that as a cost-effective measure, vaccination should be where we're focusing.
Kia ora, I'm Gwen McClure, and on The Detail today, if we have a vaccine against a devastating and deadly group of cancers, why aren't more people using it?
Professionally, I am a head and neck cancer surgeon. So my expertise is to treat patients with head and neck cancer, which is a very complicated problem. The treatment is very harsh. For throat cancer, typically the patients would have radiotherapy and chemotherapy. That is a really, really tough journey to embark on. But that is, to me, an ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. Mm-hmm. Although people do survive the treatment and the cancer, they do suffer long-term consequences of that treatment when they survive. And prevention would have been so much better so that they don't get it in the first place.
The virus that causes these cancers is HPV, human papillomavirus. It's a group of more than 200 strains that can cause a variety of cancers. Dr. Sui Tan is a surgeon and chair of Head and Neck Cancer Foundation Aotearoa, which commissioned this study. We'll come back to him. But first, Dr. Kathy Stevenson, a GP in Porirua. She's also on the board of the foundation and of the STI Education Foundation. I asked her to tell me about the cancers that HPV can cause.
The ones that are related to HPV, so the over 90% of cervical cancers, the vast majority of anal, penile, vaginal, vulval, and throat, and you know, the back of the nose cancers, the vast majority of those are caused by HPV, and they're caused by those high-risk HPV strains. So if we eliminate those high-risk HPV infections by vaccinating, then theoretically, we will be able to eliminate those cancers. Now, obviously, that's going to take time, because this is such a prevalent virus that nearly everyone in the community has been exposed to it. But over time, we should be able to hugely reduce the rates and also hopefully eliminate many of these cancers in coming years, which is extraordinary. I mean, we don't have vaccines for most of the other cancers that we're exposed to. So this is a really amazing opportunity in terms of this vaccination. And it's one that I don't think we're embracing in Aotearoa as well as we could.
The vaccine is called Gardasil 9.
The most common strains, if you're looking at the non-high-risk types, so those are the ones that will lead to genital warts rather than the cancers, are types 6 and 11. Now, there are 14 strains that we think are high-risk and are related to the different types of cancer, and the most common ones of those are strains 16 and 18. So if you look at the high-risk strains, they're 16 and 18, and there's a few others, but they're not as common. And then the lower-risk ones that go on to cause genital warts are 6 and 11. So you won't get the same strain that causes genital warts that will then also go on to cause cancer.
Okay.
But unfortunately, it doesn't mean that if you've had infection with a low-risk strain and had genital warts, you can't also get infected with a high-risk strain that could go on to cause an HPV-related cancer.
Okay, so we have a vaccine that prevents some of these strains. How many strains does the vaccine prevent against?
It's preventing against 9 strains, and it prevents against the most common high-risk strains that cause those cancers we've been talking about, and the most common ones that cause genital warts. And it's an extraordinary vaccine. It's one of the safest and most effective vaccines around the world. It's low cost, and it actually prevents cancer.
So how does the vaccine work? It's 2 doses or 3 doses?
Depends on your age.
Okay.
So that's another good reason for people to get vaccinated early. So if you're under 15, you need two doses and they need to be at least 6 months apart. If you're over 15, you need to have three doses. So there's a better immune response that's mounted in younger people than there is if they're over 15.
Okay, and is that why the cutoff is 26?
Partly, I actually think mostly the cutoff is 26 because this vaccine is most effective if it is given before you have any sexual contact. Because these risky strains of HPV, you get exposed to them through intimate sexual contact. Doesn't need to be full sex, but certainly sexual touching, intimate touching, skin to skin, that kind of thing. The earlier we give people the vaccine, the less likely they are to have had any of that sexual contact, and therefore the lower the likelihood that they've already been exposed to an HPV infection. So we can still vaccinate older people, and certainly in our clinic, we do vaccinate people who are over the age of 26. It's not funded, but we do still do it because they will still get some benefit. They will get some immunity against strains of HPV that they may not already have been exposed to. But it's definitely much more effective before you've been exposed to any strains. So that's in that really young age group. So, at the moment it's offered year 7 and 8, so kind of, 11, 12-year-olds in New Zealand, and that's the ideal age. But we can give it up to 26, but it's just not as effective. So in terms of whether or not you should get the young people in your life vaccinated, for me personally, it's an absolute no-brainer. This is one of the most extraordinary health innovations of our times, really. And it seems such a tragedy that in New Zealand, our vaccination rates are really lagging behind our international, colleagues in this space.
One of the reasons for that is the COVID pandemic. The vaccinations usually take place at school in years 7 and 8, so those children who were in lockdown during those years missed out. Rates haven't really recovered since then. But Kathy says there are other reasons too.
I also think that because of COVID, there was a lot of vaccine hesitancy, a lot of fear around, what vaccines might do, what potentially the side effects are. Are there any risks associated with these vaccines? Have they been properly tested? Now, when it comes to Gardasil, this is one of the safest vaccines we've got in the world. So we can really reassure people about that. But there is still this sense of hesitancy around vaccines in general. Then, if we look at Gardasil in particular, there was a study done by Seqirus who looked at, and Seqirus are the company that have the license to distribute Gardasil in New Zealand. And they also, as part of that work, do a really huge amount in terms of promoting and educating people around this vaccine and the benefits of the vaccine. And they did a study looking at why parents refused Gardasil vaccination for their children. And it was actually really interesting. And some of the things that came out of that study were that parents didn't want to think about their children developing cancer. And they didn't want their children to have to think about developing cancer in the future either. And I understand that. I'm a parent of three young people, and I can imagine that would be very confronting if you didn't understand the health benefits associated with it. Parents also didn't want to be thinking about their young people having sex or having sexual contact, and they didn't want to be having that conversation with their children at that age either. So the fact that Gardasil is preventing viral infection that occurs through sexual contact and is preventing the development of cancer in later life meant that this was a really difficult issue for parents to think about. So it often got put in the too hard basket, and they didn't think about it, and they didn't engage with it, and therefore they didn't agree to their young people having it.
But it's not just parental resistance. A One News investigation a couple of years ago found that 44 schools, most with a Christian affiliation, have voluntarily opted out of the DHB-funded immunization program.
Some religions might see that by actually supporting the vaccine, that they might be encouraging promiscuity.
It's unconscionable that they'd be doing this in this day and age, and completely unacceptable that they would be getting taxpayer money to stand in the way of cancer prevention.
However, Catholic schools have been offering the vaccine since 2008.
Anything that prevents harm or hurt to our young people, is inherently good.
So where do we sit compared to other countries internationally?
To be quite honest, Gwen, we're doing really, really poorly. So at best, at the moment, if we just look at a single dose of the vaccine, and a full course of the vaccine is actually two doses, but if we look at a single dose, our rates at best are sitting around 70% of our young people. If we look at the age group that have completed the course, so they've had two or three doses, depending on their age, we're looking at a completion rate of only about 66%. So two-thirds of our young people are what we would consider to be fully vaccinated. And the really awful thing around these statistics is if you break it down by ethnicity, we're looking at full vaccination rates of only 40 to 50% of Māori and Pacifica young people. Now, compared to overseas, so there are some countries around the world that are doing this absolutely brilliantly. The UK, for example, has got around 83% complete vaccination rates for their young people, and Australia is sitting in the 80% as well. And Australia are on target to eliminate cervical cancer in the next few years as a result of their high vaccination rates. So fair to say, we're not doing well.
Where do we want to be on that?
Well, our target that the government has set for us is 75%. So they would like 75% of people vaccinated who are eligible, and we're falling short of that. But compared to international communities, we've set our target rate really low. So the World Health Organization would actually like our target rate to be 90%. So they have set a target of eliminating cervical cancer by 2030. And to do that, one of the things that's required is to get 90% of girls around the world vaccinated by 15 years of age. So I would love to see our target actually raised from 75 to 90% in line with the WHO's target. But at the moment, our target rate is only 75%, and our actual rate that we achieve isn't even reaching that. It's falling way below.
We need to start by setting the vaccination rate at 90%. And we need to set a timeline in which we want to achieve this. What about 2028? And by 2028, Australia is on target to eliminate cervical cancer. How about that? Wow. Our neighbor is going to achieve that. And they have achieved the herd immunity now. And we should do the same. Now, during the COVID pandemic and after, 32,000 young people miss out the HPV vaccination altogether. And we don't have a plan to catch up with them. So we are, as a country, we are missing the opportunity to reduce the burden of these HPV-related cancers to the patients and their families, and the cost to our healthcare system.
Why is our target not at 90%? Who's responsible for that, and why was that decision made?
I do not know. I think that this was set a long time ago. And I think the key here is to recognize that that is too low to start with, and then to move on from there. And we need to look at ways to achieve the 90% vaccination rate in both males and females. And after all, the government is paying for the vaccine free. And we need to ask the population to take that opportunity. And we need to make it easier for them to get vaccination. And of course, we need to resource this vaccination program. We are almost there. We're 66%, you know, we're not 0%. So I think with a relatively small investment, we can achieve that. But we have to do it collectively. We need to bring the public along. They need to be convinced that this is beneficial to them and their families.
So year 7 and 8, that's 11, 12, 13 maybe. So do you think that there's a chance that parents are not very keen to participate in this program at that age simply because they can't kind of imagine their 11 or 12-year-old being sexually active? So it seems at that point too far in the future to really wrap their heads around the fact that that's something that's going to impact their kid?
Now, I think that this is the conversation that we should have with the parents. We should not be regarding this as to do with the sexuality and so on. More than half of these cancers affect the throat, and most of them are men, are younger men. So they're not just women who get these cancers. I would like to look at a different way of explaining to the families, the parents particularly, that we are doing this to prevent these young people, these children, getting cancers later on in life. I think that is a better, more accurate message. The young people are going to have sex, whatever they prefer to do at some point in time, right? And parents are not going to be there to absolutely control them. And so we need to look at this differently.
For some cancers, such as cervical, there are ways to detect it early. A year ago, New Zealand switched to a new type of screening test to detect precancerous changes. Instead of the traditional smear test, now people can choose to use an HPV swab that they can do themselves. But for other cancers in this group, there are no early detection tests, which is why Sui says it's better to just vaccinate.
More than half of the 600 new cases per year are throat cancers. And this incidence is rising at 5% per year. And we don't have a screening program for throat cancer. And if we want to step back and look at the whole picture, clearly, vaccinating the population to prevent all HPV-related cancer is the much better proposition.
Kathy and Sui were both part of a study on the economic burden of HPV-related cancers. Here's Kathy again.
So it was a pretty blunt tool, to be honest. We only looked at the treatment costs once the cancers had been diagnosed. So it doesn't include things like the cost of going to the GP and getting your cancer detected in the first place. It just looked at the treatment costs and the hospital-related costs once these cancers were diagnosed. What we found was that over a 3-year period, the cost of treating these cancers was around 105 million in New Zealand. If we had looked at things like, pre-cancer detection and treatment, for example, if you look at pre-cancer detection for the cervix, that cost about 50 million over the 3-year period. So the total cost would be much, much greater than that 105 million. So a significant health cost for cancers that, collectively we have about 600 of these cancers each year in New Zealand. So they're very expensive to treat. And at an individual level, what we know is that the treatment can be really, really awful. Often these are detected quite late, and the treatment involves surgery, radiation therapy, and various other types of treatments, and can be really disfiguring and can impact people for the rest of their lives. So, the treatment cost is a pretty blunt tool, and obviously there's a whole lot of other things that affect the people that get these cancers as well.
So, just doing a bit of quick math, if this was over 3 years, we've got about 1,800 people affected by these cancers. So, 1,800 people whose lives are greatly impacted, not to mention their families
Absolutely.
And friends. Then we've got $105 million just for that treatment cost.
That's right.
But none of that needs to be happening. These cancers are preventable.
Absolutely. And that was really the reason behind doing the study, was to say to the government, we really need to invest not just financially, but actually in terms of resourcing in improving our vaccination rates so we can get close to vaccination rates in other countries and we can start to really impact our cancer figures. Not just because there's financial costs, but as you say, at an individual level, there are huge amounts of other impacts for these people that are affected, and we could and should be doing better.
Those of you who did this study, what do you hope to see happen?
Well, we would really love the government to prioritise Gardasil vaccination. So we could certainly improve our uptake. We could improve our messaging and certainly move away from, you know, this huge correlation around sex and cancer and talk about it more as, look, this is a vaccine that good parents do. You know, this is what people do to protect their kids' health. It could be an extension of the childhood immunization schedule, as opposed to at the moment, I think it's seen very much as a standalone, something that's just for teenagers. Whereas you could say, hey, look, you've done all your other baby immunizations and childhood immunizations. Mm. This is just the next one for your child. You know, it's part of that same program. I think we could really focus on our most vulnerable cohorts, so our Māori and Pacific communities. And as we did during COVID, you know, hand those programs over to them. You know, say to the local iwi, look, you know, your vaccination rates for your young people are probably in the 50s. What are your ideas about how we improve this? You know, how are you going to reach those young people? We'll support you, we'll resource you, and we'll let you come up with the ideas of how that's going to work. And I think that would be effective. I think we need better messaging. And I think we need to find the missing thousands that didn't get this opportunity during COVID. So there are many thousands of young people who were not offered this vaccine during COVID. And at the moment, there has not been any resource put into trying to identify and reach those young people and offer them this vaccine. Now, GPs are able to do that. We've got a really good immunisation register now, and we can identify those young people. But GPs simply don't have the resource or time at the moment. So again, I think the government needs to prioritise this and look at how do they support primary care to find those young people and then bring them in and get them vaccinated.
That's all for today. The Detail is a Newsroom production supported by RNZ and NZ On Air. This episode was engineered by Jeremy Ansell and produced by Alexia Russell. Thank you to Dr. Sui Tan and Dr. Kathy Stevenson. I'm Gwen McClure. Ka kite.